Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Nall. Today on the Progressive Commentary Hour, America's new police state, the militarization of domestic law enforcement, and towards what end? My guest in this hour, John Whitehead. John Whitehead is well known as one of America's foremost constitutional lawyers and human rights activists who stands up for those who are persecuted and the oppressed. In 1982, he founded the Rutherford Institute and deals with civil liberties and human rights. He has fought many times in the U.S. Supreme Court and has co-counseled in several landmark Supreme Court cases as well. He has been featured or appeared on 60 Minutes and other programs, and his most recent book is In the Government of Wolves, the Emerging American Police State. His website is rutherford.org. Nice to have you with us, John. And John, I'd like for you to take a look at what I'm seeing. I'm seeing thousands of videos where the police, in making their arrests or stopping people or confronting people, are using excessive force, sometimes tasering, pummeling, beating, kicking, shooting, killing, in some cases, individuals. This is disturbing. This is not the way the police should be treating the citizens, and historically, this has not been, unless you're a person of color. Then this is nothing new. The trouble is that this is now being seen as a problem mainly for those in color, and I'm saying, well, shouldn't we all be concerned about how everyone is treated, no matter what their color, and why do they have to do this? Why are they arresting people for minor infractions that a person shouldn't even be given a ticket at jaywalking? Okay, you jaywalk. Go on your way and don't do it again. They're being brutally arrested. Could you address these, please?
What I'm seeing, and I'm a constitutional lawyer for almost 40 years, it's what we would call the underclass, the lower classes that are getting their heads smashed in most of the time. Occasionally there's a mistake made, and that does make the news when they mistakenly, there was the mayor up in Maryland, Mayor Calvo, where they went into his house and put guns to people's heads. That made a lot of news, and he came out, he was very outspoken then at that time. He didn't like the whole idea of the SWAT teams. But, yeah, basically, my book, A Government of Wolves, goes into all this, but the training now is very, very military. I have people who are in the police academies. I had one fellow who dropped out and said he couldn't take it anymore, just the thuggishness of how they're being trained in the police academies. I talked to some older policemen that teach in the police academies. They're saying the same thing. They say this is what's happening now is frightening them. Then you have the Department of Homeland Security handing out all this military equipment across the country, millions upon millions of dollars. In fact, it slowed down a little bit under George Bush, but it zoomed under Barack Obama, where they're handing out, you know, MRAPs, mine-resistant armored protection vehicles, sometimes Black Hawk helicopters, assault vehicles, all the armored equipment. And then you have the 80,000 SWAT team raids that are occurring, and those are on the increase. It's just how they're being trained now, and they view people differently. But I think you're right. The word racist is very well apropos. I've been challenged on that before, and I say that. People go, oh, that couldn't be true. We live in post-racial America. We really don't, because the clients I see that we deal with are people that would not be coming out of Goldman Sachs or would not be Sean Hannity. So, and the other thing that you did not say, and I think they do have a shield about them, and the courts, by the way, protect them all the time. In cases we get in where people are, like you say, to beat the hell out of them, the courts back it up, which is shocking. So what we've seen is a kind of an oligarchy. I'll call it an oligarchy has developed that protects the police. And when I talk to cops, they know that they can beat a jaywalker up and get away with it. And once that happened, that's called qualified immunity. Once that happened, there's no way to stop this stuff. I don't think you can stop this train now. The only way you can stop the train now is dismantle what we're seeing. And here's the other factor we have to put into this. At this time, crime is at a 40-year low. The murder rate is drastically down. So you ask the good question, why are we seeing all this? But the thing is, as I show in my book, once you put the uniforms on these fellows, you arm them and you train them, all the psychological studies, the Stanley Milgram studies and others show that these guys view themselves as the military. When they're seeing you and I in a car and we're pulled over for a speeding ticket, they're looking at an enemy combatant. That's how they view us now. That's how they're trained. How we're going to get out of this mess, and I'll say it again, the only way you can do it is dismantle it, and they're going to resist. But there are some good signs. There was a town up in Michigan a few days ago where they saw police brutality. People have stormed the city council meeting. They're demanding this guy, the police chief, be fired or regulated. It happened in, I think, a town in New Mexico. So people can change this, but the average American, as I indicate, is watching 150 hours plus television a month. They're sitting there watching Sean Hannity say these things, or the other so-called celebrities that are protected, by the way, by these kind of people. So we're down at the bottom of the ladder. I'm down at the bottom of the ladder. If I step out of line, I can get tasered, pulled over, shot, my head slammed down. So that's the lay of the land. I'm telling people, wake up. You are in a police state. It's very Nazi. How to get out of it? We're going to have to dismantle it on the local level, one at a time.
Well, there's another way of looking at it. It's more existential, and that is, if it gets so bad that it's crossed over from 90% of the people who are stopped and searched in New York City are African Americans or people of color or Latinos, if the people in the upper echelon, if they started to do sweeps of homes in Greenwich, Connecticut, in the affluent area, if they started to go on Ivy League colleges and start searching everyone, if they started doing the same thing they do in the poorer neighborhoods, if they did that same identical thing in affluent neighborhoods, you then create a critical mass. Until you do, most Americans will not care what happens to someone else. We are an extraordinarily selfish nation. I don't like to say that, because there are certainly people who are not selfish, but they are not the ones who are causing the problem. The ones who are causing the problem are the ones who are indifferent to it. And I use this. Think about in fascist Italy in the 1920s, after 1922, when Mussolini and his Black Shirt Party and his National Fascist Party, because the fascism we are dealing with today originated then. And when you combine the worst of government and its power base and the worst of a mercantile class that was immune from prosecution or harassment, all to protect its profits, which it then funneled to some politicians. And you look at the people who were benefiting or didn't want to be bothered, that was the majority.
Yes.
And they went after the communists, the socialists. They went after the intellects. They went after the social agitators. They went after the people of conscience. They went after the people who were the intellectuals. And that's who got arrested. That's who's got arrested. That's who's got beaten up or killed. Then you segue into Germany, because Germany used the same model. Where were the vast majority of the 50 million people who were the average citizen in Germany? They were all fully aware of what was happening.
Oh, yes.
And yet they did nothing. The average
American, 1933, as early as 1933, there were articles from, even on the radio across Germany detailing what was happening in the concentration camps at that time. But people, here's the thing that I find about a lot of Americans. It was like the NSA, when they found out the NSA was listening, well, what if I'm not doing anything wrong? Why should I worry? And I would look him in the eye and I'd say, you have to study history, silly. Nazi Germany, a lot of those people said, I'll never end up in a concentration camp. Well, in 1933, fast forward to 1938, and some of them were there. I mean, neighbors were calling up people reporting that they were listening to foreign radio and they were put into concentration camps. They never thought they would be there, but they never thought their heads would get beat in. That's eventually going to come. That is the train of history. We're on that train. I keep telling people the train to Auschwitz has already left. The question is, can we throw something in front of that train to block it? I'm not sure right now. I think that, and here's the thing, you mentioned another thing that's really important, fascism. Corporatism is what Mussolini called it. The corporations are making so much money off of these gadgets that the police are getting. For example, an MRAP, the mine-resistant armored protection vehicle that I'm talking about, people can go online and see one of these monsters in action. It's a tank. It costs $150,000, those things do. The police departments get them for $2,000. In other words, the Department of Homeland Security is handing out $150,000 vehicles to police departments for $2,000. We're paying the $150,000. So it's the taxpayer paying some corporate entity to make a lot of money off of this stuff. So we're dealing with a matrix of things that's so powerful that, and again, I think truth, you know, truth can bring things down, but we're going to have to listen to the truth. We're going to have, and shows like yours are great. You're getting the information out. We have to wake people up. We have to get mass resistance and movements. Now, I mean, and again, I don't see a lot of movements. I don't see people out there, you know, people like you and I are talking about, but where's the mass resistance? There is none right now. The last one was Occupy movement, and they beat their heads in. I mean, I saw that. I had Occupy clients. They were smashing their faces in. 80-year-old women getting pepper sprayed in the face for just being at a park. They put them down. And you know what? I saw people from different spectrums of the political realm cheering for that. So, but we live in a very similar society that people in Italy lived in and Nazi Germany, right?
I see this as happening. I see the Nazification of our corporatization, of our totalitarian mindset right now. It just takes a matter of time. But I believe within 5 years, you will have a complete control of the Internet. I believe that you'll have anyone who speaks out against corporations, like right now the movement against Monsanto and GMO foods. If you speak out against government policy, I see that you being specifically targeted.
Yes.
How long it'll take before their mass arrest depends upon if there's any national emergency that they can declare national martial law.
But and that's probably coming, by the way.
If you look at the martial law that was written and Oliver North helped write that, then you'll see that there's a reason for those detention camps. Now, people living on the Upper West Side, where I live, and people walking to Lincoln Center and seeing the finest of culture, when you go to Columbia and Theological Seminary and Barnard and New York University in Manhattan, and you think, what are you talking about fascism? What are you talking about a police state? We don't see that. Where is it? And you think, oh, my God, friend, you don't see
Wake
global
up.
Warming. You don't see acidification of our oceans. You don't see the great dust belt that's now occurring in the great corn belt in Kansas and Indiana, Illinois. You don't see the drought and the wells going dry in Texas, Oklahoma, Colorado, New Mexico, and California.
Our polluted water in Toledo.
Yeah, and they're and a dollar a gallon they're charging now. You don't see, and that's out of a tanker. You don't see the poverty in Compton. You don't see. You haven't been where I've been in Camden, New Jersey, where you got 100 blocks of destitute and poverty, where there's a gang on every block. I know. I went out there three months ago and filmed them. I was walking up on, and the police stopped me several times. Says, "What the hell are you doing?" I said, "I'm filming." "Do you realize you're putting yourself at risk?" I said, "Well, I could be, but I also believe that these people have a story to tell. And if we don't tell their story why they're here, what's going on here, then it doesn't change anything. Maybe by me telling their story, it'll change things." So the police looked at this as a war zone. I looked at it as a human tragedy. The ghettoization of America, we blame upon the people who are poor who live there, not the circumstances that took away the factories that gave them the jobs. Camden, New Jersey was once one of those prosperous cities in the United States. It was where we had all the ships built. And RCA Victor there, the sign is still there. And Campbell Soup, it was there. We outsourced all those. We took their jobs away. What the hell is Spelman supposed to do if we take away the means of their employment and do nothing to help rectify, rebalance that with some other opportunity? So I'm seeing people who don't see the problems in America because they're not their problems. I'm looking at people who don't care about other people being hungry because they got abundance of food. I'm seeing people who've never been stopped by the police, would not be stopped by the police because they don't fit the profile, but they don't care about the people who have been stopped. And then, as you said, and this is my final point on it, when someone does get their head slammed in the ground, it's not someone in a business suit, someone coming out of a church, a synagogue, or a mosque. It's not someone coming out of a college campus, a professor. It's not someone coming out of a, you know, an executive building, you know, or a media. Could you imagine if someone out of Fox suddenly got slammed to the ground? Could you imagine if Bill O'Reilly got slammed to the ground? How long do you think that all those 3 million people who watch him, or however many it is, how long do you think it would take them to be up in arms and suddenly say, my God, what's going on? Until someone has an association and a connection with the suffering, the crimes against humanity, they stay detached from it. Your thoughts,
yes,
please.
Very, very parallel to Nazi Germany. But you raised another point a few paragraphs back, which is what we're seeing with the Internet right now, and I'm writing some stuff on that. I've been doing a lot of research there. The Internet's going to, in my opinion, it's basically a totalitarian experiment. They're going to be able to track anything you do, whatever you say. Google is going to be reporting people they already are for so-called infractions. Your automatic devices are going to report you. This is all coming, I'd say, within 10 to 15 years. So if you step out of line the smallest way, the computer systems, if they wouldn't want to call that, the artificial intelligence is going to be reporting you to the police. So all that's coming. And you're right. What I see history tell me is that it's when they arrive at the door, people finally get the point, oh, no, they're taking me away now. And the question is how to wake people up. Well, again, we're yelling about it, and we're yelling very loud. There are a few other people out there yelling, but what I'm trying to get people is to organize, get out there, and if you have to, follow the models of someone like Martin Luther King, who was so radical by the end of his life, he wanted to shut Washington, D.C. down. He said it's time for militant nonviolent resistance. That's what we need, and we need people who think like that, but there are very few leaders out there that are doing this today that have that kind of power. And when I was growing up in the 60s, there were some cultural people who spoke out very strongly, songwriters and stuff. Today, we have Justin Bieber, people like that, who sing about absolutely nothing. So there's nobody organizing youth. There are some good signs. I see a lot of people, usually around from 25 to 35, that are reading these dystopian novels. They're seeing it, but they seem to be helpless. They don't know exactly what to do. So I think that there is some hope, but if I was a big painter and painted it, it would look quite dismal at this particular point in time.
Well, you've either got a utopian mindset or a dystopian mindset in most people today. They
yes.
either want to live with a fantasy of what was ideal from the past, which wasn't, or what should be the future. So you have a lot of younger people wanting to get away from all the confrontations and conflicts and remove themselves into kind of a utopian environment, someplace in the woods, someplace at the ocean, someplace in the mountains, someplace somewhere. And that disconnects them from reality of what we're dealing with now. And then you have another group of people who are basically cynical. They're burned out emotionally. They are so removed from their spiritual essence, all they care about is making money. Their idea is, I'm immune. If I make enough money, if I get successful enough, if I can get that apartment, that house, that car, have these friends, all of whom are connected in some way to power, we're immune. We're above it. We're the ones who watch the other people getting it, but we keep our sanctity. And I see those people in Wall Street. I see them, many of them, hiding away in academia. I see a lot of the people striving so hard to succeed, not because there's an idealism in success, but because it overrides their insecurity and lack of confidence in self. Both of these groups, ones that are pushing hard to get away from the problem, another are trying as hard to escape the problem. Who's going to change the problem? We come back to what you said. Can it be stopped? I've just finished 7 years of in-depth research and filming on a new documentary and a book on the 12 tipping points, which is now 34 tipping points. One-third of them have tipped. No matter what we do today, if we stopped every single car, train, plane, smokestack from spewing the particulate matter from coal, if we stop all gas, we would not be able to change the climate back. We are going to tip. It's just how soon will it happen and what will be the consequences. So it's tipping. Now, that doesn't mean that it's an end of days. It means that we must reposition ourselves not to be on the water, like Miami and lower New York City, and not to be in a drought area. We have to be where it is sustainable. But then we think, okay, what good does it do to have a place you can live for quality of life if you have no freedoms in that life? And that's the part that people, they want to take away our rights. They are doing it. There are people fighting back. You are fighting back. The ACLU is fighting back. Some other people are fighting back. But you're right. John, there is no mass movement. And until we have mass movements, I think that what's going to happen is going to double, treple the number of
police.
And
it's moving very fast, by the way.
And until there's not just the people of color who historically in this racist nation, and by the way, I want people to save me the tears of saying, oh, my God, but I've never done anything racist. It's not whether you've done something racist. It's whether or not you have challenged those who have.
Well, Martin Luther King, great quote, he said, the hottest places in hell are saved for people who in times of crisis remain neutral. And so, yeah, I'm not a racist, but it's really not my problem. But, yes, it is. If you're a human being, it's your problem. It's just like if someone is down and out, do you walk by them, spit at them, say, those, and I run into that even in my town here. People look, go, oh, I was speaking locally once, and a lady says, what do we do about the homeless people? They smell. I want to say, lady, you smell too. We all smell. That's the point. So reaching out and helping others is really, really key. I think that's, if you love people, that's right. But when I go back to Nazi Germany, the first people they started rounding up were the two classes of people were so-called asocials and homeless people. That's always the sign that the train's moving. The other thing is that we have to understand that the government is, and that local police are tied into this. I talk to local police agencies that communicate, and there's no more local police agencies, by the way. They're connected to the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, CIA, NSA. They're preparing for something big. They won't say what. It's either an uprising or whatever. I can't get exact out. Even cops that are friendly to me, they won't tell me exactly what they're being told. But it could be, as you say, environmental disaster. Department of Homeland Security buying $1.6 billion hollow point bullets, enough for 20 years of warfare, by the way. You have American agents running around with hollow point bullets with explode on contact, explosive slug shells, by the way. They're buying slug shells now that have, they're not your regular shotgun shell with a little small buckshot. They have jagged slugs. In other words, they smack. When they hit you, they blow you apart. You have FBI agents, IRS agents, Department of Homeland Security agents, Department of Education agents running around with those kind of armaments. What are they expecting? So they're expecting something. My assumption has always been environmental, because like you, I don't see the uprising. So what big crisis are they ready for? And they're ready for something, folks. By the way, if you study history, and I've written on this, look up Mount Weather. The government, the elite, has places they can go hide all over the country. Mount Weather being up here in Northern Virginia, just above me, where after 9/11, they said the line of cars when 9/11 happened was so long that people couldn't get into it. But they have shopping malls, everything. They're going to hide away. So in other words, maybe we blunt. They don't give a damn about us. We're the little people, okay?
John, one of the largest cities in the United States has never been photographed and never been discussed. It's been worked on for over 60 years. Now, there have been people who've gotten as far as getting about a half a mile in, riding in a truck and filming it, but it's been billions, hundreds of billions of dollars spent on this place. Who's it for? Why haven't we been given any information on it? It's a reality. You know, you can see all the trucks going in and out of it, and it's all underground. And
what you're saying should be enough to scare the holy poop out of people. You have a secret government hiding underground. What does that say? We've gone past the tipping point at that point. We're being ruled by secret rulers who have all these armaments. You step out of line, they're going to smash your face. But how do they get away with it?
They get away with us
watching things. I mean, the zombie movies, I tell people, we got zombies, folks. I look at them walking along the street. They almost get hit by a car because they're staring at this thing in their hand, or they're staring at a laptop or a television set. So they've got control of us. I stopped watching television entirely 2 years ago. What a relief. I don't know any more about Brad Pitt's pimples, any of that kind of crap. Focus on the real issues. If we can get people out of the distractions, you know, and Aldous Huxley predicted it, we would be smiling at Big Brother when he arrived. We wouldn't be afraid of him. And I think that's where we're headed.
John, you're a constitutional attorney fighting on our behalf. You fought in the Supreme Court. You've had a lot of victories. I believe that the Constitution is designed to limit state power, and we have seen this whittled down through many different acts and bills to limit mass democracy and to concentrate power in Washington. I believe this is a cancer that's being intentionally fed with the intention of being metastasized. This has been particularly evident during the Bush and now the Obama regimes with the war on terror. A war on poverty, we have more poverty. A war on drugs, we have more Americans taking drugs. A war on terror creates terrorists. A war on cancer, we have more cancer. So we have
the war on poverty.
We have war on poverty, we have more people poor. All of these wars mean that we have a mindset that reason does not exist. And then you end up with a country that's perpetually on security alert. You have the Patriot Act. And since we discussed the Bush White House briefly, how about taking us into what you see the most insidious policies enacted by the Obama White House that are contributing to the U.S. turning into a police state?
Well, Obama does whatever he wants to do. Executive orders, I mean, the courts are very deferential to Obama. I'd say that the National Defense Authorization Act, re-upping that, I think that Obama, and we've seen the actual cases, we've had cases where people have been jerked out of their homes by for just doing Facebook posts by the Department of Homeland Security, FBI, military, and the local police working together, and that's happening here and there all over the country. There's no security. In other words, if the military wants to arrive at your home and take you away, that's going to happen. The thing about Obama is that, and I'm not sure Obama, I mean, I actually talked to a CIA agent, a former CIA agent not too long ago, and he says, he looked at me and smiled, he says, Obama is a Manchurian candidate. I said, what do you mean by that? He says he's like a robot. I've actually read where people who have done interviews with Obama in the White House at his desk, he reads from a teleprompter even in private meetings. So we don't, Obama is not running anything. It's the same oligarchy that's been operating probably since Eisenhower. And again, go back and read that great speech that he made on the military-industrial complex. Things change. We're in the complex. We were in the complex from the 50s on. And it's just been growing. And what we saw in the 50s with the McCarthy era and all the way up through to where we're at today. So it's been a long time. We haven't been thinking. And Obama's just another link in the chain. And here's my fear. The next president may be the last president in a free country. I don't know what you think about that, Gary, but if we have a free country, and I'm not sure we have a free country because voting, I'm just telling people, voting is an illusion. If you're ruled by an oligarchy, whoever is the president is whomever they want. The same people that were funding Romney were funding Obama when they ran against each other. We did a study of that. So we're ruled by, true power is always hidden, as we know now. The NSA, the CIA, they sneak around, they watch us, they spy on us. You mentioned the Constitution. The Constitution, in my opinion, the Bill of Rights, the Fourth Amendment, and it's not me just saying this, friends I know on the left and right, the Fourth Amendment's dead. The key feature that protects us against the police state. They're spying on us, collecting records. They're not doing it for probable cause. They don't have warrants. So that's where we're at. But like I said, Obama, it's zoomed under him all the handing out of this equipment. I'd say if I saw anything overtly, the most dangerous sign is all this equipment going across the country to local police, hollow point bullets, those kind of things, assault vehicles. We have a standing army now, the thing that the founding fathers warned against. And the standing armies are not good. They knew it. You're going to get shot for minor infractions, and the alarm bells are going off. I'm not sure people are listening.
John, what role has the growing government-funded and subsidized private military-industrial complex and private intelligence firms, that are thousands of them,
yes,
they end up being able to transform our local city and state law enforcement into an arm of Washington's totalitarian control to limit America's democratic acts and liberties. And it's the people don't always realize today you have private jails. You have
private prisons, yes.
Private prisons, but you also have private court systems.
Yes.
You have private probation officers.
Private cops running around, too, and those
private,
are scary.
Private cops. And so I know I spoke with a person when doing my Poverty Inc. film who said it's been rough getting work because he was actually brought in into a debtor's prison, which means he now has a record because he couldn't pay his bills. He was so poor he'd lost his job, had no money. He was on public assistance. That didn't stop this private group from getting him. He then had to pay for each day he was in jail and everything they gave him from food to the actual being in jail. Then when he went to see a probation officer, he had to pay for the probation officer, and all these other fees were added on, which kept him perpetually in debt. And yet when he goes to work, he's shown as having been in prison, even though it was for debt. And then we have 27 states now have debtors' prisons. I don't think people are even conscious of how serious this is.
Well, I have a good article. People should go to Rutherford.org and read it this week. It's called "We're All Criminals and Outlaws in the Eyes of the American Police State." We actually have a case right now with a lady named Nicole Gainey, her 7-year-old kid. She sent him 4/10 of a mile down a road to play the part. Cops grabbed him, brought him home. She didn't know it. She was in her house fixing dinner. It was a Saturday afternoon. She had a cell phone that she had just talked to the child and told him to come on home, which was around his neck, by the way. She made a special case. Other kids were playing there, unsupervised. For some reason, they picked him out. Someone supposedly had reported him walking down the street. They came up. They handcuffed her immediately, slammed her down on her porch. She said, "Where's my little boy?" She started crying. She thought he'd been killed or something. The kid's sitting in the back of the police car freaking out. Finally, they bring him out. He walks up on the porch, sees his mom. He's 7 years old. He starts crying and says, "Mommy, I'm so sorry I went to the park today," and he goes in. The police grab her, take her to the police station. This is amazing. Her boyfriend happened to be at home at the time. She says, "What are you going to do with my son?" She says, "He can stay with the boyfriend." And they walked out. 7 hours at the cop station, fingerprinted. She's charged with a felony, child neglect, 5 years in prison, up to $5,000 fine. We're defending her now against that. We're moving to dismiss this crazy thing, but we're seeing that proliferate, people getting arrested for collecting rainwater, having Bible studies in their home, for having snow runoff, growing vegetables in their backyards. The several cases we've had where an old lady down in Norfolk, Virginia, had a chicken in her backyard for eggs. The police came and confiscated the chicken. It's against the law. Some of these people are serving jail time, but what they're doing is they're putting them in jails. They're staying there a long time. They end up start making products for some of the larger corporations, and they're all detailed in this commentary, and it's all footnoted. But that's what we're seeing. But I go back, Nazi Germany, the parallels will frighten you. Auschwitz was essentially a private prison. It made armaments for the Nazis, military armaments, and also various products for Europe. So we're back to that same kind of parallels I see. But it's scary, but people don't realize this is happening. I mean, you get arrested for collecting rainwater, or you're fined for having solar panels on your home?
Two issues. First, Auschwitz and Buchenwald and the other, those were extermination camps.
Yes.
We haven't got there. The detention camps, yes, we had those when we arrested
well, in the beginning,
all the Japanese
they were
Americans in the 1940s. And we had no one apologizing for taking people who had committed no crime. They were just Japanese origin, including Japanese American. Most of them were citizens of the United States, had never committed a crime.
Yes.
We felt nothing, we felt no guilt nor compassion. The one of the hallmarks of a psychopath is someone who is charismatic, will convince people the rightness of their decision, but have no feelings whatsoever for the negative consequences of a choice they make. I see this in Bill Clinton and Hillary Clinton when they put the sanctions in place and it caused 500,000 deaths of Iraqi children. When Madeleine Albright appeared on 60 Minutes with Leslie Stahl and was asked, do you feel that it's okay for 500,000 children to die because of these sanctions? She said yes.
That was mind-blowing,
that,
yes.
You know, I mean, that is what we're dealing with. We're dealing with
or people. You're almost describing Obama. So very charismatic.
Oh, yeah. They're all psychopaths, in my opinion. Most of the members of Congress are psychopaths. The judicial is made up of psychopaths. I mean, we have the media. Are you kidding? Massive psychopaths. People who are really manipulative or very cunning, who will use anything to get power over other people. And then you start, I've said many times, Bill O'Reilly was born at the wrong time. I feel sorry for him. He would have been better in 1296, leading the Crusades,
yes.
You know, or heading the Inquisition. That's what we have today, and yet the average person is still not seeing it.
Well, here's the key thing that people, I talk about in my book, A Gun with the Wolves, just the educational system, too, plays a big role in all this. The kids today in public schools, and we've had hundreds of cases, just minor infractions that get their head smashed in. Kid brings a Lego in, a one-inch Lego with a little half-inch gun on it. He's removed from school, charged with a weapons violation. We're seeing all these crazy cases, and again, I list those in the book, Gum of the Wolves. And if you go to our website, we actually have a section on the crazy zero-tolerance cases. But then the kids don't think anymore. They're not teaching them to think. There's no debate. It's all that's gone. So we have a school system. And it's the great Hitler quote, and I paraphrase here. He said, you say I can't have your children. I already do. They're in our schools. So the public schools, and I'm telling people, get your kid out of the public schools, homeschool, find a good private school, but don't have them in public schools. They may get a criminal record. They're certainly not going to think. But the educational system, Lincoln was right. What they learn in school, the next generation practices that. And they're being taught, by the way, that if the state says something, you step out of line, you're going to get your head smashed. Whatever the cop's going to tell them. People wonder this. Someone getting an anal probe in a large city by the cops and 50 people stand and watch. Where did they learn to do that? They're being taught that in school now. So what we're talking about here is very dismal. It doesn't look good. People are going to have to be taught to think. I'm telling people, take your kids at home. We actually have a free brochure we have basically for children. It's called Do You Know Your Bill of Rights? It's got little cartoons in it. People are teaching their kids at home the Bill of Rights. Here's a startling thing. I spoke to 150 of the best lawyers in the country not too long ago, Berkeley, Harvard, about our cases. They were sitting there kind of smug, but in the middle of my speech, I said, enough smugness. So I looked around the audience. I said, can any lawyer in this room, this is a civics test, give me the five freedoms in the First Amendment. My wife was at the back of the room. She said they were arguing it here and there and trying to figure out what it was. One guy started to raise his hand. I said, if you raise your hand, I'm calling on you. He put his hand down. Not one of them could tell me what was in the First Amendment. Does that blow your mind? My friend Nat Hinhoff, who also lives in New York, I told him that. He said, John, it's much worse than I thought. So if you don't know your rights, how do you stand up for them?
But even when you know your rights, it doesn't mean that the police are going to honor that, because we see people constantly in these videos
getting their head beat in, yes.
Yeah, and they're getting their head beat in and arrested or tasered or shot when they're have committed no crime and are telling the police they have rights. The police don't care. And the backside of this is the courts are going to protect them. Let's deal with the courts and the judges. Why haven't we had more courageous judges stand up and start issuing challenges, legal challenges against and precedent against the police?
The courts are part of the elite system. They're part of the oligarchy. It's just clear. I'm in and out of courts. I see it. Even the ones that appreciate what we do, they're nervous. They feel they need the protection. One even said to me, they had, you know, actually on the side, he said, they protect my property. Yeah, but they don't protect our rights. That's the key, dude. So the courts are part of the oligarchy. You have an oligarchical system. It's the legislatures, the courts, and the executive are working together. Even in small towns, I see that. You mentioned mayors in small towns, yes. The only thing that they'll listen to, and I'll go back and say it again, is people in an uprising. And I caution, I believe in the Second Amendment, but be careful. They are so armed, they will blow you apart. and they will be protected. They do fear, though, numbers. And I've seen it in areas where people have actually taken a stand. 100 people go down to a city council meeting, you'll get a result. You storm that city council meeting. And by the way, I tell you, it's much more fun than sitting home and watching somebody on television. It's fun to cause ruckus at a city council meeting. You'll get a result, and you may save someone's life or rights. But they're not going to listen to anybody unless you get mass numbers, because they have the weapons and the oligarchy protecting them.
John, a recent survey of state and local law enforcement agencies conducted by the National Consortium for the Study of Terrorism and Responses to Terrorism identified the sovereign citizen movement as the top threat for domestic terrorism, and Islamic extremists and militia groups were the second and third. And the sovereign movement is a loose term for many right-wing groups who are patriotic but anti-government, which includes tax protesters, and many would fall into the libertarian camp. However, because this group is so loosely defined, it could also include many in the nonprofit community who adamantly oppose government policies concerning the environment, ecology, and climate change, and U.S.'s escalation of wars and conflicts of aggression around the world, and our National Security Agency and spying on citizens, and GMOs and big food, if you're opposed to them, suddenly you're in that same group. So how much do you believe that our police state is targeting these groups, and why do they consider them such a threat if many actually represent the will of the people who oppose GMO labeling, for example, or government spying?
Well, you know, the Department of Defense right now, the Pentagon, has the Minerva Research Initiative, which is a $70 million project. They have a university study how they can control what they call civil unrest. So they're studying how to make sure there's no more Occupy protests, no more anti-war protests, tax protests. So there is a mind behind it. They want to stop it. I mean, it's so offensive. As a constitutional lawyer, the government is studying how to put us down before we get going. We've actually been involved in cases where people are getting ready to do some small anti-war protest or something. The FBI actually, by reading, and this one, going back to what we said about the Internet earlier, they're reading their Facebook posts, their text messages. They're collating them, and then they're going right in and trying to disrupt them by knocking on a door and asking for an interview of the protesters to see if they can find a way to stop them. And they do, by just doing a so-called interview with them, that people get afraid and they don't move. So, they definitely want to stop all this. I talked to a couple local police chiefs recently, and I asked them why they had all these weapons, assault rifles and stuff, and one of them looked me in and said, well, we may have to face a contingent. And I said, what do you mean by contingent? He says, I just can't really say. But he's talking about what you're talking about, yeah.
We discussed a little on my Noom program last week, which is the increase of police violence upon Americans. We're also witnessing laws in more than 180 cities that basically are designed to cleanse cities of homeless people and those in poverty. And these laws are being enacted by town and city police departments. However, although there is an epidemic of police violence and illegal activities taking place across the country, these conversations are nowhere to be heard on Capitol Hill or in the White House. We're therefore led to believe that our elected officials condone this activity. So the big question is, what do our leaders expect to ultimately achieve by increasing domestic law enforcement into heavily weaponized military squadrons? And at the same time, we are a nation that has 200 million people living at, above, slightly, or below the poverty level. We have 40 million Americans who have already lost their homes. We have 18 million children who are going to bed food insecure. They don't have enough food. We have 12 million senior citizens who are not able to have any standard of life because they can't afford medicines, food, utilities, and mortgage or rent. And none of this is being addressed. The only thing it's addressed is if you happen to be one of those unfortunate people who've lost your job and the only asset you have is your car or van, and you pull over into a quiet place and you're trying to sleep, you'll be arrested. Your car impounded. Now, if you're in the Carolinas, you got whole lot of problem, because down there it's gotten so bad that local communities get their money by stopping people and confiscating their assets.
Yes, asset forfeiture.
Talk about asset forfeiture. Talk about the fact that we're making it impossible for homeless people to live anywhere unless you go into the desert or the woods. And by the way, there's 16,000 homeless vets in the middle of the woods in Florida. I filmed them for my documentary, American Veterans Forgotten and Betrayed.
Oh, we have homeless vets here living in woods, too. Yeah. Well, it's the ultimate goal of the kind of government we have. And governments in the end, generally, to be honest with you, unless they're extremely limited, is control and power. Asset forfeiture, the police, if you get a traffic ticket, or if something's found in your car they think may be illegal, they can actually seize your car. You have to go into court to fight for that. It's called asset forfeiture. They actually split the assets, by the way, if they keep your car and sell it with the federal government. So the federal government gets a kickback on that as well. That's, you know, I have articles on that on our website at Rutherford.org that people should go read, but they make millions of dollars off of that stuff. Even little small governments are making it off of that. But I think in the end, I think what I'm saying is that if you have a Congress, for example, that gets free bottled water on their desks, free flowers, free haircuts, better service at Walter Reed Hospital than the veterans do, I know that for a fact. They go up on a gold elevator, the people in Congress, flying around in jets and limos. None of that should be proper. There should not be a White House, in my opinion. That sounds pretty radical to some people. I don't think the president should be living in a palace, because he is our servant, supposedly. When you have people living in the elite, it's 1984, it's Animal Farm. Remember at the end of Animal Farm, the pigs and the humans look at each other and they all look the same? That's where we're at, folks. And the problem is, we're the animals out in the yard where we're the chickens in line for the slaughterhouse. And that's the way they view us. Otherwise, you can't explain what's going on. I mean, you have an elite. You have a president while the country's falling apart, golfing and going on vacations. Who is running the government? It isn't him. So that's what you're dealing with. We're dealing with a government that, but it's like Animal Farm. Listen, when the president speaks, I say this. When his lips move, he's not telling the truth. You can't believe it. And who told us not to do that? It was James Madison, who wrote our First Amendment, the Bill of Rights. He said, we ought to mistrust all those in power. But Americans just sit there and smile as they're doing these things.
Final thoughts on this as we come up to the end of this hour of our program. I remember, I was very young at the time, but I remember watching on television at a friend's house scenes of the carnage in Vietnam, especially the Tet Offensive.
Yeah.
And my friend looked forward to this each day. He would eat his supper, and he'd watch this. And one day I said to him, what do you make of this? He said, well, it's entertainment. It's like John Wayne. And I said, no, it's not entertainment. I said, would you feel the same if your brother or your sister came back in a body bag? He said, no, I wouldn't feel the same. He said, but I don't have a brother or sister. So it's just a distraction. And I said, that's unfortunate. But I also imagined then that an awful lot of Americans didn't view this as important until their daughters and sons came back mangled, hurt, or dead. Then suddenly it became an issue, became a big issue. And that's when we started to realize this is real. And I wrote about it that at the time. Now, jump forward to today. Here's my perspective, John, and then we're going to let you have the final words on this. I see probably 70% of Americans so focused upon surviving and just wanting to keep themselves out of stress or conflict that they no longer trust their own capacity to reason and do homework or research, no scholarship. So they find ideologues. Maybe it's a Rush Limbaugh or Mark Levin or Keith Olbermann, and then that's who they pay attention to. So all their truths have to come through that person. They don't want to sort anything out for themselves. You tell me what to believe. You tell me what to eat. You tell me how to think, and that's what I'm going to do. You tell me who to vote for. That's what I'm going to do. And so we probably have about 20% of the American population who are simply incapable at this time of making responsible, reasonable, spiritual choices. And those are your corporate Democrats, corporate Republicans. Those are the people that watch Fox and listen to MSNBC and listen to NPR. You then have another group of people who are fully capable of independent thought and action, and they are independents. They're the ones who have caused a boom in organic produce purchases, going to farmers' markets, re-energizing and rejuvenating small green businesses around the United States. More often than not, a lot of them are fully aware of the deficiencies in our educational system, the curriculums, how they're taught, and want better education and better standards. They're the ones who want a better character development for their kids. They're the ones who will watch a video or listen to something and then ask, is this true or not, and see whether it's true, including the conflict currently in the Middle East and or in the Ukraine. They're the ones who will wait before passing judgment to see who actually blew down the plane. And right now it's looking like it was two jets from the Ukrainian side. But they'll wait. Now, these people have not unified yet. They have around certain issues like labeling genetically engineered materials. It wasn't any of the major environmental groups that have $200 to $400 million in their asset funds. Those are corporatized in foundations. They long ago sold their souls to get sponsorship and keep their money coming in. These are grassroots. One woman in California who was so impassioned by the GMO debate started the march against Monsanto, and I just participated in it 3 months ago, and we had 5,000 people show up at Union Square, mainly from my radio audience, to march against Monsanto. But they had 5 million people around the world do it in hundreds of cities. One person did that. None of the major environmental groups were present at all. So what I see is we have an opportunity to really start to impact the police state, the fascist state in Washington, the totalitarian state by those who are the oligarchs. We have a capacity to challenge the technocrats who are the people on Wall Street and in the universities and in Washington. We have the capacity to make a difference if we organize, if we protest, and our biggest protest is go off the grid. Stop banking in their banks, stop buying their food, stop watching their television, stop reading the newspaper, stop electing their officials, stop everything we're doing, stop using their credit cards, stop buying their homes. We don't need to own a home, and we shouldn't because the currency is going to take a really big drop when we no longer are the reserve currency in the next 1 to 3 years. When we do that, we impact them because we impact their bottom line. When we then start to challenge them, as you are doing and have done, we need 1,000 more lawyers working with you and doing what you're doing. We need to take people who have money and give it to foundations that can bring more people in and give them a living to fight on our behalf. Then I believe that we have a chance to stop this nihilistic movement towards total totalitarianism. I don't want to live without protest, where I know I can walk down the street and likely not be stopped, but someone of color would be stopped. Someone of a different ethnicity would be stopped. Someone with a different different projection could be stopped. That is the wrong kind of society to live in. Your final thoughts?
Well, we're there in that wrong type of society. You can change things. You have to free your mind. That's what I say. People, it always starts with the individual. It starts within you. Then you go out, you get others. I'm telling people to get together. Some people say, well, gee, I live too far away to get in the meeting. I say, you have a telephone, right? So Some local people I've talked to now are getting 20 people on the phone. They meet once a week, and then they organize and go down to their city council. You can do it. You have to take the time, though. Then you're right. Turn the television set off. Turn that thing off. I mean, I'm not saying you can't watch some movies and stuff like that, but don't watch these talking heads, because I've done all the big shows, and I've met a lot of these people, and they're not the brightest people under the sun. And I'm not saying that in a bad way. They just are. We don't have a lot of intellectuals running things today. And the other thing is, educate your kids. I have people sitting in my office with master's and doctorate's degrees. They've never read 1984. It was banned in their school. They've never read Mark Twain. It's banned in their school and down the list. So America, it, to me, is the individual. It's the person doing it themselves. It's what de Tocqueville saw when he came over here when there was no government, and he was like, wow, I can't believe it. There's very little police and stuff. We were fooled. We were asleep. They took over. There's the great John Carpenter movie, by the way, called They Live, if you haven't seen it. That movie tells a lot of truth, folks. Put on those Hoffman lenses and see the truth. In the movie, the fellow finds some sunglasses. He looks and he finds out everything around him. He's being subliminally indoctrinated. And we are, folks. They're shooting messages at us from every direction that we don't know what's going on. So think for yourself and get out here and get organized. I'm waiting for someone to – I mean, we're at the Rutherford Institute. We fight to get funds because I'm considered a maverick. I'm out here defending the little old lady whose kid wants to play at the park, and she's got a 5-year prison sentence facing her now, which is crazy. This is happening in America. So wake up, get organized, and fight back. Don't give up. And listen, let's say this. I talk to a lot of guys that say I'm an atheist. You may be an atheist, dude, but maybe when you get over on the other side, there may be something over there, and they're going to look you right in the eye and say, why didn't you live your life better? Why didn't you help that homeless person? Why didn't you help that person who was getting their head beat in? So take action. Help your fellow human beings, and that's where to start.
John Whitehead from Charlottesville, Virginia, website Rutherford.org, the book In the Government of Wolves, the Emerging American Police State. Thanks a lot, John, for all that you do, for your sacrifices and courage of going up there against these people. There's a whole lot more of them now to go up against, but we just have to keep bringing this to people's attention. It's nice to know that you're out there on our side.
And you too, sir. Thank you.
I'm Gary Nall. This is the Progressive Commentary Hour. Thank you very much for listening.